You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ohio Huntsman Podcast. This week's episode is actually about invasive species. So we've been seeing some stuff. Actually, our dad has been sending us some articles on, you know, the problem with wild hogs in this country, and that sort of spurred the conversation. So we talk wild hogs, we talk Asian carp, just, you know, how big of a problem there is, you know, if we, maybe some thoughts on how we might solve the problem or attempt to solve the problem, or just some things to even think about when approaching the problem, I guess. We even get into a little bit of invasive plant species. So, interesting topic that affects everybody in this country. So, before we get into that, though, I want to talk about our sponsor, Monster Whitetail Grub. So, Monster Whitetail Grub is an Ohio deer feed company. And what that means is they're an Ohio company and they try to source everything, their ingredients, even their packaging, from Ohio. So, it helps the Ohio economy. And you guys get a really good, we've had good luck with their signature Monster Whitetail Grub feed. It's a high protein feed with mineral mixed in. They also have flavored corn, which they have all different kinds of flavor options you can get. Takes just standard corn up a notch. So if everybody in your area is running corn, this might be something you want to look at. And then if you're just looking for straight mineral, they've got that also. So go to our website, ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors. And you can get in touch with them and try some of their stuff. And with that, let's get into updates. What do you guys got going on that you want to go over? Anything?
So this past weekend was my niece's controlled hunt. You know, we'll probably get into, you know, some stories from it a little bit later, you know, on a later episode. But we went out, we had a good time. We didn't harvest any deer, but we, you know, had the opportunity to see some deer. She did click the safety off, so, you know, she got the safety off. So
got the heart pumping.
Right, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I think had the heart not been pumping so much, we probably, you know, at least would have had a shot. But the heart pumping, you know.
We've all been there, man, yeah.
Kind of, you know, and yeah, I mean, it was really one of the, I mean, first deer she's ever seen, you know, so, you know, while hunting. So
sure.
It took her a little extra time to get on target.
And right.
By that time, you know, it was too late.
That was at Mosquito Creek, Mosquito Lake, what is it?
Mosquito Creek.
Okay. All right.
Wildlife refuge.
Okay.
It was the youth controlled hunt.
All right.
So that's what I've been up to.
Yeah, I went out for my first two sits, I guess, of the season. So it was, I guess it would have been the second weekend of season. So I think it was October 3rd, 4th. And out at this, you know, Summit County Parks Hunt Zone that Jacob got drawn for, and didn't see a single deer. But I think that was more on me. It was just poor stand choice, given the time of year. And, you know, we had gone in and looked, you know, did some scouting and picked some spots that I had picked out some spots that I liked, thought looked good. But I think I was too set on those spots instead of going where the sign told me I should be. You know, I just had these spots in mind, but it was a good opportunity to get some of the kinks worked out. You know, the first sit, you know, get your gear all squared away. I've got a few things that I changed this year that I was kind of trying out and things. And so it was a good opportunity to kind of do that without, you know, being halfway up the tree and going, oh my gosh, there's a deer, right? You know, like one of those scrambles and everything's a cluster. And it was kind of nice and leisurely in that regard. So, but it was good to be out there. But yeah, that's about it for me. Jake, you got anything going on?
Yeah. Jeff, Dad, and I went out opening weekend at the parks. Jason sat that one out, spent time with the family, and then, like he said, just went out this last weekend, you know, but the opening weekend, we went out, and I sat a ground blind that they had set up. They went and did all the scouting and prep work and set me up nice with the ground blind. I shot, I think it was the first evening. We didn't hunt the morning of opening day. But I shot a doe. If you follow the story, Instagram stories.
And I think we mentioned it briefly last week that you got a deer. So, but you can, you can enlighten us with some additional details.
I had put a trail camera up on this area, and you know, I pulled that card going in, so I was sitting in the blind, quickly searching through the images, and I saw that there was these two deer that were running together, a small buck and a doe. And the small buck worked its way in, and I wasn't going to shoot it, so I started shooting it with the camera and recording it. You know, and then next thing I knew, the doe that had been running with him showed up, and she wasn't so fortunate. So I harvested her, which was all good. She didn't go too far. Good shot. Everything was good there. And then after I had shot her, there was another four or five deer come through out of range, but similarly on the same path, but out of range. So I kind of used that information to adjust where the ground blind was a little bit. Going into Sunday morning, I hunted the same spot because I figured if it isn't broke, don't fix it, but didn't see anything. So then I moved the blind a little bit midday Sunday. Sunday evening, went and sat that same blind, but I had moved it 50 yards, probably closer to where those deer crossed out of range. And didn't see anything where I wanted the deer to come, but I did have a deer come into the left of my blind and never had a shot at it because I didn't have that window open. It didn't come to the right side of the blind that had the window open. So that one got away, so to speak. But I kind of knew where the deer are because I was seeing deer. And then I haven't had a chance to get back out there, but I know Dad sat that area when he went with you, Jason. So, and he didn't see any deer.
Saturday he sat there. Sunday he sat in a stand north of there, but he saw deer on the Sunday morning sit north of the blind, right, but didn't see anything when he sat in the blind.
So who knows? They might have shifted a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, that's kind of the thing with this time of year is, I guess, why a lot of people don't like hunting October or call it the October lull. It's because patterns change quick this time of year.
Yeah.
So you can be on them one day and off of them the next because temperatures change or food changes or there's a lot of shifts going on. So
sure. Yeah.
We'll see. Jeff and I are going to get after him again this weekend coming up. Jason's going to have to sit this one out. He's got a special anniversary coming. So
yep. It's 10 years with me and the wife.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. It's one of those things, you know, it's like 10, it doesn't feel like 10 years, you know, but
yeah.
Or like, you know, I was just telling Amanda the other day, you know, Ella's going to be turning 5, you know, Lily's a little older than that, but you know, I said, you know, the time, it seems like a blink of an eye, you know, she's going to be 5. I told her, you know, it's kind of freaky to think that, you know, the time it took her to go from 0 to 5 is the same amount of time it's going to take her to go from 10 to 15, you know,
right.
Like it just feels like a 10-year-old is, I don't know why I picked that number, but like a 10-year-old seems very different than a 15-year-old, you know, a 15-year-old
right.
daughter's like, you know,
yeah,
the dreaded, you know, teenage daughter thing, but I'm sure it'll be all fun and wild and interesting when we get there, but. Just one of those things that was like, oh, man.
Yeah. And then speaking of Lily, I took her out hunting at my property. And the first night we went out, it was Tuesday of opening week, I guess. So opening day was Saturday, obviously. I think it was, oh, no, it was Monday. Monday night. Took her out. We didn't see any deer. The neighbor messaged me and said, are you out, you know, and I'm like, yeah, we're sitting in the blind, and he said, oh, well, the deer are at my feeder. So they went to the wrong place, basically. So he tried to go out and run them off and see if they'd come our way, and I did see them running, but they never ran to us. You know, they were well off through the woods or whatever. So
sure.
But then we went back out Thursday in the evening, and everything came together just as it should. I put her on, I put the crossbow tripod type thing for her, and helped, you know, I mean, she's only 5, so with a lot of my help, was able to sit there, you know, sit in the blind with me though. And we missed the first one because I got this cheap knockoff phone scope thing. And when we were shooting at the target, I felt like it was working, but I don't know. I'll have to check it again, I guess. She missed the first time. And I mean, you could see what she was aiming at on the phone, and it looked like she was dead right. So I don't know if something with the scope and the zoom and it throws something off. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I have to check it, but she missed, shot low, you know, and that was all well and good. We went and got the arrow, made sure she missed. And, you know, I knew she missed because you can tell from the sound if you hit a deer, you know, it just sounds different than missing a deer. So, but then we got back in the blind and she did a good job, and we took the little phone scope holder thing off, and she just used the regular scope, and she was able, you know, when the deer came out, I had set it on the tripod, so I had set it, we were hunting over corn, you know, trying to get the deer to come out so she could have an opportunity, and I had set it up basically aimed where it needed to be, and the deer came out and she did a good job. She, you know, I took the safety off and I said, all right, it's pointed at the deer. Just pull the trigger whenever you want. And she did. She smacked it. So she got herself her first deer.
Awesome.
So, Yeah, she was super excited. Unfortunately, it didn't go as well as I wanted in terms of the recovery. She was a little forward, I would say. It was a younger doe. She shot it kind of through the front shoulders, basically. Not all the way up, you know, to the meaty, bony part, but she was up a little bit from. So it didn't bleed right away, and I was having trouble getting a blood trail, and it's hard to keep a five-year-old calm down. So we probably went too soon to look for it, and I think we bumped her, and so it ended up being that I had to take Lily home for bed, and then her mom actually came and got her. And then I went and recovered the deer, but I, you know, so we didn't get the chance to, she didn't get the chance to do, recover the deer or get pictures or anything like that. But
right.
There's always next time, I guess.
Yeah. Yep.
So, but yeah, it was all good. Got a bunch of meat in the freezer. So.
That's good.
Yeah.
Sounds like season's off to a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of deer. I mean, I knew I'd see deer at my property because there's a lot of does at my property that need thinned, but yeah, I, out at the parks, I guess Dad's seen deer now too, but I was the only one seeing deer out there. So
I think the closer we get to rut out there, the better it's going to get.
I think so too. I do too. I think it's going to be, because there's not a defined food source in the sense of like ag fields or that kind of stuff right there that's going to hold them. So I think once we get closer to rut and they get more on their rut patterns, bedding to food to chase, you know, I think we're going to have better luck.
Yeah.
Because there's pretty clear defined travel through there, and there's a bunch of old rut signs, scrapes, rubs, that kind of stuff. So I think we'll get into them here in the next couple weeks, hopefully.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, should we get into the topic for this week then?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Ohio Huntsman Podcast, where three brothers, Jason, Jacob, and Jeff, discuss all things hunting in Ohio. Our goal is to be your source for accurate and reliable hunting news and conservation issues in the great state of Ohio, as well as some fun and interesting conversations along the way. This is the Ohio Huntsman Podcast.
Are you listening?
All right, so invasive species, feral species, that's kind of what we're going to go through today. Actually, what sort of spurred the idea was Dad had sent us this article about the U.S. wild pig population, and, you know, it's got a, it's a Fox News article, so it's got, you know, they can be somewhat sensational in their headlines. I think a lot of the media outlets anymore are, right? They're starving for our attention. So, rising populations of wild hogs worrying experts, many deemed super pigs. So, that sort of spurred a text conversation about, you know, invasive species and feral species. And so we thought it would make for an interesting podcast topic. And, you know, hogs isn't one that we in Ohio here struggle with too much. I mean, there are feral hogs, and I'm sure the people whose property is affected by hogs would argue differently, but I guess as compared to other states, right, we don't have it near as bad as, say, Texas. You know, Texas is one of the states that they called out specifically in this article. Texas, Florida, they have big problems. This article says there's the according to Texas Park and Wildlife, Texas has roughly 1.5 million feral hogs. Florida has more than 500,000 wild hogs. and they're estimated to be between 1 to 2 million in the southeastern U.S. That's according to the University of Florida. California also has a large population, so they don't mention Ohio specifically in this article, but that sort of spurred, that's where the topic came from. So, and I know, Jeff, you had some things to add about the programs that, I don't even know if programs is the right word, but some of the things that they're trying to do to help combat some of these invasive species.
I mean, in Ohio, you know, when it comes to hogs, you know, we have pockets of wild hogs. Sometimes when the pockets are identified, trapping programs can be very successful at, you know, trapping all or most of them and, you know, kind of removing that pocket. Other times, you know, the landscape just doesn't allow for that, or the population's gotten just too big, you know, to trap them all. So, I mean, I think if you're looking to hunt wild hogs in Ohio, probably like Venton County, Jackson County, is probably the main area where you'd probably have the best luck. A new cool thing that a lot of game agencies and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's trying now is a lot of these invasive species are popular game meat. Wild hogs, Asian carp are popular game meats, not necessarily here, but in other countries. So a lot of a new push is to basically rehabilitate the reputation of these animals, you know, as a food source, so that people will start targeting them as food. You know, a lot of people hear carp and think, oh, that's, you know, bottom feeder, that's gross.
Right. I guess that sort of presents you can easily play that out in your imagination to where you start this as a way to reduce the numbers, you know, maybe get rid of them, but you get far enough down that path of people liking to eat them, and all of a sudden they kind of want them around, right? I mean, they enjoy eating them. They can go out, you know, with hogs, you can go out, get one any time of the year, day or night, right? They're sort of no holds barred, right? And they, you know, you get a I don't know what the word, a following, if you will, people that enjoy hunting them, enjoy eating them, and you get into this sort of ethical conundrum, I guess, where you know they shouldn't be there, or maybe you do, maybe you don't, I don't know. But like, I could see me, right? Like, I know that they shouldn't be there, but man, is it cool to bring fresh wild pork home for the freezer, you know? And so is there, I don't know, what are your guys' thoughts on that, right? Like, do you make the goal to get rid of them, or do you try to get to a point where you get to a balance to where they're not continually growing, doing tons and tons of damage? I mean, this article about the hogs says that it says the hogs already cost the U.S. an estimated $2.5 billion, with a B, each year in damages and control costs, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's a buttload of money.
Yeah.
So do you, do you find a place where you're not spending that much money in damages, but they're not, you know, people can still enjoy them?
Well, my understanding is, and I'm not super, super familiar, but I don't know that there's a, I think the reason that they cause so much issue is there's no way to control them. Right. Without completely eliminating them. You know what I mean? Like, you can't manage them like you do a whitetail population, or because they just have, they're so adaptable and they have so many young so often. Like, they're not a, you know, they don't have young one time a year.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. What I've heard with wild hogs in Ohio, not in Ohio, but in the United States, and feral pigs, is that you have to harvest somewhere between 85 and 90% of the population annually to keep it a stable population, which is a ridiculous amount. You know, I mean, that's, you really have to basically hammer them down to nothing every year just to keep it stable.
And you basically, I mean, unless you had intensive hunting programs, you're not going to do it with just shooting them with a rifle. Even shooting them at night, I don't think you'd, I mean, you get a group of them come in and you get a couple, two, three, maybe if you're lucky, the conditions are right. That's not 85%. You'd have to do that night after night.
Right.
You know, they're going to wise up to that. They're, you know.
Right. Even
so it seems like one of these scenarios where you're just not going to do it with a rifle.
Right. Even trapping them where you, whatever, you set up a big pen and, you know, with a trap door and you trap whatever, 5-6 of them in one night. My understanding from what I've kind of seen and read is, you set the trap again the next night and you have another 5 or 6, and it just goes on and on. Like, there's no end to them.
Yeah.
Or they get trap smart and then you don't catch any, but they're still there.
Right.
I mean, because they're not, I don't want to say that other, you know, animals are not intelligent, but they're smart. Like, if you try to trap them and they get out of the trap or beat the trap, or, you know, like they're half in, half out and the door slams, they don't go back in there.
Right.
They don't. So, yeah, I don't know. It's
right.
It'd have to be a significant management program, like you said. I mean, you see videos on the internet of guys just flying around in helicopters and just shooting them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know that they ever even go back and get those. I think they just shoot them and just to shoot them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just because there's so many of them and they're causing so much trouble.
So I guess to bring that back around, maybe the conversation on, you know, do you run into this scenario where people like to eat them and they're depleting them, at least in the case of hogs, is sort of a non-issue because people attempting to hunt them and bring the population, you know, to get rid of them through hunting for human consumption, it's not going to happen. I mean, unless every hunter in the country targeted, you know, I don't know, you had a quota, you have to shoot, you have to shoot X number of hogs a year. I don't know. I mean, that gets into some kind of crazy dystopian.
Right.
Like, you have to shoot X number of hogs a year or what, right? Or else, yeah. You know.
I mean, because Texas is, you know, they have commercial hog trappers who are trapping hogs for the commercial market. And then hunters and their population still out of control.
Yeah.
you know, they're just slowing the expansion, if you will. You know, they're just slowing them down. They're not, I don't think they've even tipped the scales in the humans' favor yet.
Okay.
You know, and that's with guys who it's they're making a living off of it. They're, you know, running trap lines, if you will, for hogs, and you know, every day they're pulling behind the cattle trailer or whatever and filling it full of hogs and taking them to be butchered.
Yeah.
So, which that's another kind of weird thing in this day and age, like, you know, something that's seen as a game species being commercially harvested. You know, that's what,
like hogs as a game species, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's seen as a game species. And
by who? Like in what way, I guess?
That people are going out and hunting it.
Okay.
In that regard. I mean, it's not something that I guess they're trying to manage, but it's people are going out and hunting that and recreating from it is basically what I'm saying.
Do you know, are there any states that are like managing, you know, there's bag limits, there, you know, restrictions on wild hogs?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, at least not restrictions in like bag limits. You know, there may be some states that have like ethical restrictions. You know, you have to shoot them with such and such a caliber or whatever.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I don't think, not that I know of, that has any sort of like bag limit or requiring a tag or, you know, something like that.
Sure.
I mean, okay. Ohio, if you want to hunt hogs during gun season, you have to have a deer tag. But that, you know, that's the only thing like that. And that's not because they're trying to keep you from shooting hogs. It's because they're trying to keep you from poaching deer and saying that you're out hog hunting.
Right. Yeah. But
Kentucky's doing a similar thing to, you know, what Texas does with commercial fish, you know, with commercially their silver carp. They're now trying to develop a commercial market for it.
Meaning people, yeah, could catch them and take them to some sort of fish market and sell them?
Yeah, if you had a commercial fishing license.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you have to actually, I think, have to have a commercial fishing license. But they're trying, you know, they're working with commercial fishermen, fish markets, stuff like that, to find some avenue to take these fish. Because if, in Asia, you know, they're a prized, you know, food source. Like,
right,
they really want them. But in that market, they really want, they want fresh fish. There's not much of a market for frozen carp.
Okay.
You know, frozen Asian carp. So they're trying to find other markets, you know, basically trying to make fish products that people will eat frozen, you know, making like fish dumplings and sausages for like the European market.
Okay.
Stuff like that. And then I think they're also kind of trying to work with local chefs to, which, I mean, this is kind of with all of these invasive, you know, species across the country, they're, you know, game agencies are trying to work with like local chefs to make there be a local demand, whether, you know, how big or small that is, it, you know, every bit helps. You know, it's the kind of the you can't beat 'em, eat 'em movement.
Okay.
you know, I think that's actually like a cookbook or something. I can't remember. I think it's a a cookbook you can find online that is all invasive species recipes. You know, can't beat them, eat them.
I need to find a delectable Phragmites, invasive Phragmites recipe.
Yeah, that one might be hard.
Yeah. I don't know what to do with those.
I mean, I know people eat cattails, but that's about as close as you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to believe that there isn't something, and maybe the cost of getting it is still too high, but I was going to say, like, it's hard to believe that, like, in the pet food or, you know, some sort of feed industry wouldn't take, you know, wild hog or, you know, even Asian carp or, you know, something like that. Some of these invasive species are still good sources of protein, but maybe,
yeah,
maybe the, you know, they've got connections set up with, you know, the beef and probably domestic pork industry to take their scraps that they can't get rid of any, you know, can't, right, they'd just be thrown in a dumpster otherwise, that, you know, paying somebody to go out and trap, you know, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, because the other thing I was thinking is, like, fertilizer.
Yeah.
You know, I know you can go to, like, the home improvement store and buy, like, fish fertilizer. You know, it's like, I don't know what it is exactly other than dirt and ground up fish. But,
yeah,
I, you know, you think, especially, you know, with, like, carp, when they're being fished for commercially and, you know, they're bringing in thousands of pounds.
Right.
Like, I mean, farmers pay a lot of money for fertilizers, so you would think, I don't know, that maybe you could make money there. Like, you know, it's cheaper than fertilizer.
Yeah.
To just dump a bunch of fish in the, you know, I mean, it would cause a great stink, but so does a lot of other fertilizers we put on fields. So
as we're into fall deer season, if deer scent is something that you have used in the past or are thinking about trying this year, check out Mastin's Deer Scents. Mastin's is a sponsor of this show, and we like that because they make a really good product. They collect all their scent on stainless steel, which is more than you can say for some companies. Some companies collect on concrete, and we all know concrete's porous, and you can get off scents and off flavors, if you will, in concrete. So you get a good, clean scent product. The prices are really good, and they've got a lot of options. So go to mastinsdeerscents.com, check out what they have to offer. You can order right on the website, and they'll ship it right to your house. Now let's get back into the conversation. It's certainly a tough problem. I would be curious to know, like, obviously these things can't be managed like we do our traditional native game species or even non-game species, right? Like, the populations just can't be kept in check by those method. So I would be interested to know what, if any, kinds of conversations they've had, you know, I guess state agencies have had with, or, you know, I mean, if it's costing the country $2.5 billion, I'm hoping that they've had some conversations with, like, non-traditional sources, right? Like, somebody somewhere you would think could come up with, or a group of somebodies could come up with a simple, elegant, cost-effective solution to do something with these things. There's obviously that game agency component, because it's not an animal in a pen that you can just go out and get whenever you want. It's, you know, it's in a native landscape, and, you know, with Asian carp, you got to think about bycatch and disturbing the ecosystem for the native species. But, you know, so they would certainly be a player at the table. But I just find it hard to believe that we, other than can't beat them, eat them, that we haven't found a way to, and you don't hear me offering any suggestions. So I realize I'm not helping, but I guess, to circle back, what types of conversations for non-traditional methods of wildlife management have they had, if any, you know?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Like you said, there's it's an awful big resource.
Right.
To not try to find some way to tap into it just from that side of things, let alone also, like you said, managing that resource benefits all the natural, normal resources that they're now damaging.
Yeah, so like we need to
save money by not having them damage everything. Plus, you're also potentially saving money or making money off of a very, very, very renewable resource.
Right. Like we need to get like Apple's marketing team to figure out a way to make, you know, disposing of wild hogs or Asian carp sexy. Right. Like, right. You know, I mean, that's a lot of what you pay for in Apple products is their masterful marketing.
Right.
They do a fantastic job with it.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm talking about with like non-traditional. Like if Apple's marketing team were to sit down or, you know, pick your company, you know, Under Armour, who, you know, any of these companies that just do phenomenal marketing. What would they come up with? What story could they spin, come up with to make it appealing to where, you know, not just hunters are like, yeah, you know what? I kind of do want to go whatever. Shoot a wild hog, have one as a, you know, I don't know. I'm not a masterful marketer.
Yeah. Well, in terms of actually solving this problem,
I just solved it, man.
Well, you may be thinking too far inside the box still.
Okay.
Because what I'm thinking is there's a lot of animals out there that as humans we've accidentally almost drove to extinction. And, you know, by just the byproduct of our activities. So you would think if we intentionally tried to basically cause something to go extinct or eradicate it, you know, we'd be able to. And I mean, in my mind, if I had all the money in the world to try to solve this problem, especially with the Asian carp, the hogs may be a little bit more difficult, is to genetically modify them and basically put Trojan horse Asian carp back into the population that's going to basically cause a genetic defect after X number of generations.
Okay.
You know, and that causes them to go sterile or causes them to die. You know, allow them to breed, you know, like the first breeding. The first time every fish breeds, it breeds successfully, but then
the offspring, you know, of that fish are not
right.
Viable or something.
Right. And so many, yeah, that would you know, you got to make it so it's so many generations out that it, that they spread through the whole population. But I mean, because we've done this with other animals and humans by accident. You know, we've, I mean, not with genetic engineering, but with chemicals, we've, you know, caused entire cities, you know, because we don't realize that there's chemicals in the water to become sterilized, you know. And so you would think if we had, I mean, what number did you say? How many billions of dollars a year?
2.5 billion.
Yeah. When you're talking that kind of money, you would sure think someone would be able to find a way to manage this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could argue that Apple's development team would have come up with something like that.
Right.
But I mean, it's a great point, right? Like, instead of doling out money here to this farmer, to this landowner, to this, to that, like, just stop. And we're all just going to suck it up for a year or two. And instead of spending $2.5 billion across the country to various landowners, we're just going to put that money in a, in an account, and whoever solves the problem wins the prize. And if nobody solves it, then you can, you know, maybe you put a timeline on it. I think we're getting onto something here. It's a contest with a giant cash prize, and whoever solves it gets the money. And if nobody solves it within 5 years, then we say, hey, now I get, you know, there's a lot of farmers that you could probably put out of business in 5 years if they had really bad hog damage. And, you know, I don't know, maybe you don't, you'd have to figure out the details, right? Maybe you don't not give them anything, but instead of giving them, maybe you only give them half or whatever. Cause the, you know, the idea here is not to put farmers out of business. But if there was some way that you could sort of have them all weather the storm, because we're not going to be doling out billions of dollars in damages and control, but instead we're going to, you know, pay this team or, you know, run this contest where somebody's going to come up with a solution like that. Then you get into some, like, there's probably a movie out there about something like that where it seems good on paper, but then you release these things into the wild and they breed with
absolutely
something eats them. And now you have, like, you know, I don't know, mutant jackrabbits that eat meat or something. And
right. I don't know. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that any of these are sound scientific ideas. All they sound really
to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're very good theories, but all I'm saying is we've done a lot of this stuff accidentally in the past. So you would think if we intentionally tried to do something, we could do it. And this may kind of lead us back to, especially with the hogs, is that although they're, you know, people kind of say like, oh, I want them all gone. When it actually comes down to it, it's like, well, I don't want all of them gone. I still want to be able to hunt them. I just don't want that many.
Right. I don't want to tear everything up.
Right. And I think that's kind of the big issue with hogs is basically you either have to have zero or overpopulated.
Yeah.
Like there is no balance. They are either destroying everything or you don't have them.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because I mean, even with Lake Erie, you know, kind of some of the invasives in Lake Erie, you know, a lot of people complain about them. Until, you know, you kind of talk about, oh, well, we'll just get rid of them all. And then it's like, well, we don't want rid of all of them, you know, like because zebra mussels cause a lot of problems. You know, they damaged boats and piping systems and ecosystems, but they make the water clear and kind of clean up the water. And you know, a lot of people like that benefit, and
right.
even some wildlifers benefiting from it. You know, Lake Erie's starting to see more like sea ducks in it. And one of the theories is that the zebra mussels have kind of cleaned the water and made it so that that Lake Erie's attractive to sea ducks.
Huh.
And gobies, you know, a lot of people complain about gobies because they're eating all of the game species eggs, but also a lot of people like gobies because they basically are a really good food source for a lot of the game species. You know, they fatten them up. You know, there's an abundant supply of food. So the smallmouth, they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and, you know, a lot of the game fish in Lake Erie, you know, like these are the heydays, like, you know, smallmouth are as big as they ever been. And, you know, the walleye hatch is as best as it's ever been.
Right.
And, you know, not saying that those things are happening because of, you know, the invasives, but it's Lake Erie's doing well right now. They have two pretty bad invasive populations that, you know, are if most, you know, environmentalists would get rid of all of them with a snap of their fingers.
Right.
So there's definitely some social aspects to eradicating, you know, these invasives. You know, although people know in their heart of hearts that they're causing damage, when it actually comes down to, okay, well, let's get rid of them all, you know, I think people start to backpedal.
Right. Yeah, well, maybe we don't have to get rid of them all. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's and like you've heard us talk here, you know, each species is a little different, right? So it's a complex and nuanced problem that, you know, isn't going away. And hopefully, you know, we can figure out a way to do something, right? Keep things from continuing to spiral. I mean, like we said at the beginning of this, you know, we don't struggle too terribly bad with the hogs in particular. You know, like Jeff mentioned, we do have other aquatic invasives. You know, water's a big part of Ohio outdoor recreation. We've got the Great Lakes, Lake Erie. We've got, you know, good rivers and streams throughout the state. Ohio River, Muskingum River, you know, we've got good resources, and it all gets affected by, you know, these invasives in the aquatic sense. You know, and we didn't really even get into invasive plant species, but that's a whole another topic in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, that's a whole new ball game.
Right. I mean, I'm not familiar with names of invasive plant species per se, but my understanding is that some of people's favorite landscaping plants are actually invasive. You know, there's a lot of things that people like. They're pretty, they get pretty flowers, but at the end of the day, they are an invasive species that if not, you know, if you plant it in your flower bed and control it, that's one thing, but to like let it, you know, if it starts to spread or whatever, a lot of the things people like are actually invasive species and hurting the natural wildlife or, you know, wild plant species.
Yeah. When I was in college, I was out in the field with one of my professors, and a girl pointed out how pretty this plant was. It was like this purplish color flower, like it was like a lavender colored bush in the spring. It was a very nice looking bush. And, you know, my professor, you know, spouted off what it was and basically that it's invasive. And I remember driving, you know, like a week later, I was, I think, coming home and just looking on the sides of the highway. And it's like, oh, wow. Like, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, just it, you basically now I now that I knew what to look for. Just every hill had it on it. You know, I mean, it was just lining the highway. Just everywhere you looked, you could see it.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you control something like that?
Yeah. It sounds like, I was going to say, I don't know if it happens to you guys, but like once I see one, then it like messes with my brain, because once you know what you're looking for, you see it everywhere. And my brain starts to go like, oh my God, what, it's everywhere. What are we going to do? You know? And it's like, I'm not going to do anything to get rid of all of it. But, you know, I guess other than, you know, spread the word. And a lot of this stuff is like, well, not a lot, but you know, when you get into the plant thing, you get into the invasive versus non-native, right? I mean, we have some stuff that is non-native, but it doesn't out-compete, do damage. You know, it's not supposed to be there, but it's also not really hurting anything. You know, like getting back to like the stuff you plant in your flower beds, a lot of that stuff is non-native.
Non-native, but right.
You know,
it's not gonna choke out other stuff.
Right. I think we've mostly learned our lessons. I think some of these like ornamental grasses, I think could possibly still be an issue. You know, I don't know. But if you want to
tell you what, the way hostas grow at my house, they're pretty invasive.
Yeah, right. But if you want to Google a few, and just, you know, have your brain messed up as you're driving down the highway. The invasive Phragmites, that's one that you'll see, you know, in ditches along the road, you know, you'll see it. Japanese knotweed is another one that, like, once you see it, you'll see it lots of places. And then Tree of Heaven, that's another one that, I had that, the neighbor had one at our old house, and it was a rental and they didn't take very good care of it. And, you know, so this tree grew up, it was too close to their, you know, it was like, it was right next to their house. But man, do those things, they grow, you pull them out, you think you pull them out. And 2 weeks later, there's another shoot coming back up. It's like, good golly. But those are three. Then there's another one that I see that I'm not exact. It's one of the thistle. There's a thistle that you'll see, especially driving down the highways. Like, they'll mow. And then come summer, the only thing that's standing 4 feet tall in the mowed areas next to the highway is this thistle. And I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm pretty sure that's an invasive thistle species. But yeah, it's, we don't have the, what's that stuff down, the kudzu down south?
Yeah.
We don't have kudzu. That here. I think it gets too cold, right? But
yeah.
If you're taking a road trip in the, you know, in the southern states, warmer climates, you'll see that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many invasive plants to even count. I mean, basically, we think, you know, the invasive animals are a problem. When it comes to plant species, it's far worse typically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess before we go too much further down that rabbit hole, that's probably a good spot to end it. So unless you guys have anything else to add, we'll shut it off and just thank everyone for listening and continuing to share, subscribe, and good luck this fall. We're really getting into the heart here of seasons opening up and things like that. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a closing thought here. If you see a wild hog, shoot it, and please don't release hogs thinking, you know, oh, it'd be fun to have some wild hogs on my property, because they'll quickly get out of control. I mean, other than it's illegal, but they'll quickly get out of control and cause a big problem.
Yeah. So don't do that.
We had a hog, like a farm hog, one time show up at our house, and it was getting in the road. So we called the sheriff, and the sheriff basically said, well, if you see it again, shoot it, because basically that's all I'm going to do is come there and shoot it. Because that's, you know, we don't, with hogs, we don't look for owners, because they can get, you know, we just shoot them.
Huh.
So.
Well, there you go. Just shoot them.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening. All right. That's it for this week. One thing I'll mention, maybe two things. If you guys are sitting in the deer stand this fall and are looking for something to pass the time, check us out on social. We're Ohio Huntsman on Facebook, Ohio Huntsman _ podcast on Instagram. And you may just see that we're sitting in the stand at the same time. So, you know, that would be kind of cool to hear from some of you that, you know, if we're out hunting at the same time, we typically try to share things to stories and whatnot. So follow us on social. If, like I said, if you're looking for something to pass some of the long hours in the stand this fall. And the other thing I'll mention is, as we are getting into fall, I guess more, you know, well, two things. As we're getting toward Christmas, and as, you know, if you're looking for some new swag for, you know, deer camp, gun camp, you know, whatever, however you guys sort of, you know, if you do some sort of get together around deer season, if you're looking for some new swag for that, go to ohiohuntsman.com/apparel and check out our shirts and sweatshirts and things we have to offer there. So that's one way you can support the show and get some cool gear out of it. And with that, I think we are done, and we'll talk to everybody next week. Thanks for listening.